is Charles Gallant, user experience designer, and let's say bat pig specialist.
That's right. And this is Aubrey Goodman, information architect, front-end developer, and, you know, all-around chummy guy.
He's so nice. And this is a show we like to call Distilled. Welcome to the show. You may have noticed that Justin Davis was not the name that I listed at the beginning of the show. And that's because we have ourselves a new co-host. So say hi, Charles.
Hello. Hi, hello, Charles. World.
Yes, hello, world. To you software folks, that's especially funny. Now, I want to give just a quick shout out to Justin here at the top of the show. You know, we've loved to have his company over the last few years, and you know he's been a really great entertaining co-host, and definitely a wonderful influence on the show. He was really pretty much the founder, and I especially want to give him a shout out today because he was in a terrible car accident yesterday. That's not why he's leaving the show. He is leaving the show because he has taken a new job working as an educator in an education startup called Great Code, GR, the number 8 code, which we'll be tweeting about. You know, he's really a great guy, and I'm terribly sorry to hear the news of his car accident, but he is okay. He's in the hospital right now, and you know, our hearts and prayers go out to him, and we wish him a speedy recovery. Fortunately, no one else was in the car with him. His very young daughter was not with him, and that's very, very fortunate. And if you follow him on Twitter at the worst Twitter handle ever, at JWD, the number 2A, you will find his gruesome tale of that. And you can reach out to him and offer him any support you like. He's a really great guy, and we'll miss him a lot. But he'll be on the show maybe later this year, you know, when he finds time away from that. So that's a quick departure. This is a new year. It's a new season for Distilled, and we're really super excited to have you, Charles, here.
Thank you.
You know, I feel like you're an excellent addition to the show. You bring a great energy here.
I will. Potentially bring a great interview. I've brought absolutely nothing thus far.
So far, you've said like 6 words. It's been That's cool.
Maybe.
We'll get to that.
Maybe 9. No.
So
very happy to be here. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Great to have you here, man. We're super excited. Now, for those of you uninitiated, this is Distilled Radio. You can find us at distilledradio.com. Also, Distilled Radio on Twitter at Distilled Radio. Charles, you can find at Charles Gallant, that has 2 L's. You can find me at Aubrey Goodman, both sensible names, both full names, and easy, just simpler, right?
You know what? Accurate, like responsible names, straightforward.
Yeah, spellable, conveyable.
Humble.
Humble? I don't know about humble. Yeah, we're both kind of cowboys, and that's kind of the way the show goes. And so generally the way that Distilled goes, for those of you who are just finding us in a dumpster or a geocache, as we like to hope that you found us that way, you can find us also on Podomatic and on iTunes. This show is about technology and product development and design, sort of spanning the full gamut of all that. And, you know, we like to throw in a little bit of witty, funny banter, you know, for those 3 people listening. We like to entertain. So, you know, that's generally us. And I've rambled on far, far too long talking about all that. So we're going to get into the meat of the show. So this is the new year. We're talking about today. We're talking about various things, primarily our admittedly horribly, what would you say, inexperienced, like neither of us went to CES, but yet we're going to talk a little about it like we did. You know, I just pretty much watched stuff on Twitter, and maybe you did too.
Yeah, a little bit. It's an interesting event, right? You know, because it's such a big deal for what it is. It's a large physical gathering of people, and it costs so much money to just be a part of it. It's kind of, it's interesting to me that it seems like it's, if nothing else, a measure of how, you know, how much money you have, really, as a starter. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, it's kind of the opposite of like the Kickstarter community in a weird way.
You're like, yeah, you know, we have like, in the Kickstarter world, they're like, oh man, we're so thankful we raised like $80,000. And CES is like, yeah, we spent $8,000. That's $8 million on our booth.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because we can.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I would, you know, not to discount it, but it's funny because the experience for CES for a lot of people exists entirely online, right? You know, like that's where we all hear about it. There's only a small fraction of the, you know, consumer electronics community that actually gets to go. And so, you know, it begs the question, why even have a physical event at all? You know, like,
right,
it, wouldn't it
fucking hang out?
Wouldn't it make
Google
sense? I mean, of course, there's some value to like have.
Yes, sponsored by Yahoo. Wait, no, Yahoo's irrelevant. Sponsored by Google.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's kind of funny. It's like, well, if I'm a big company, if I'm, you know, Panasonic, right, or if I'm Sony, and I want to spend tons of money on marketing and advertising, I'm paying for presence in a physical space that will eventually get experienced online. Like, why wouldn't I just put money in online marketing? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's an interesting space. But there are some really great things that come out of CES, right? You know, like we've seen some great product releases. And I heard someone here talking in the office, unnamed office that we're not allowed to talk about, here in lovely San Francisco, talking about how CES has a curse. And that people who launched their product, like the Palm Pre, launched at CES.
Hmm.
Epic failure. Nobody adopted it. Nobody bought it. It was just terrible. And there's been a couple of products, you know, that have launched this year. And I don't even know if we should talk about it because I don't want to, like, exacerbate the curse too much. But,
well, you might as well.
Yeah. You know, well, so there was this wonderful thing. There's a very new thing, right? Yeah. I've never heard of the Sony Walkman, I think they call it.
Oh, man. New for everyone.
Yeah, new for everyone. Good. Who wasn't in like alive in 1985.
Great for walking. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not like a Fitbit, right? I mean, it's not like a personal health tracking thing. It's like I think they call it a personal music player.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Apparently, it's 100% for men. There's no women allowed.
Walk women.
Which is an interesting move for Sony in the year 2015.
It is. You know, it's kind of almost like tragically hilarious that they
walk.
Would,
yeah, and, yeah, and I mean, it stops working the moment you start running. Really, it's exclusively for walking men.
Right.
And we'll play music for them. Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, and it has a very reasonable price, right? I mean, it was like under $3,000. I heard.
Yeah. If you're a child, absolutely not. Will not work for you.
We'll just walk, child. Walk.
Won't fit in your ears. Too small.
Too small.
No.
Too small.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, I like to think that Sony, they must have had some reason for this. Other than just pure desperation in the face of all the hacks that they've endured over the last 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And, you know, more like 8 months, I guess. Like, they've had a lot of trouble with that. And, you know.
God, isn't that amazing? Like, you know.
I don't work for Sony.
Yeah. Yeah, good Lord. I did get a chance to watch the... Did you watch the interview?
Mm. Which interview?
The movie, the interview.
Oh,
that
the
was
interview.
The big...
Capital I.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you know, I haven't...
All right, so I saw it. And here's the thing. It's a James Franco movie. Mm-hmm. And what's that guy's name? Oh, wow.
Oh, Seth Rogen, is it?
Thank you. Yeah. basically, it's, you know... It's a really goofy movie. There's like tons of, frankly, there's tons of dick jokes in this movie, you know, and it's...
Which is, by the way, what I thought this podcast was going to be all about. Just like tons of dick and fart jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really disappointed in you, Charles.
Well, here's the thing. We'll get there, all right? We're still warming up.
We're only 8 minutes in here.
Warming up. But, you know, the thing that struck me after watching this movie is, God, you know, like, wouldn't it be cool if there was a really sophisticated, amazing movie that had some beautiful commentary on censorship and dictator state that was like, you know, something that really could represent American cinema in a way that deserves national and worldwide press. But
yeah.
No, this is just a lot of dick jokes.
Dick jokes, pretty much.
And so it's, I don't know, it's, I mean, great for those guys, you know, they're funny. If I, you know, if I'm drunk, it's a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
But I don't see you winning an Oscar, unfortunately.
Or even, what's
Watch, it's going to win an Oscar this year for something. Watch now, of course, because I said it.
We've given it now the distilled curse, which is the opposite of
right.
whatever. We say, no, it couldn't possibly win that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I feel like, I thought it was interesting that, well, I mean, a lot of the conversation around the interview was interesting just because, like, censorship is fascinating. It's like terrorism, right? As soon as you terrorize someone, as soon as you censor them, they either have... What they have, like, extreme polarized reaction, right? They either really hate you and just, like, never say a word and just quietly, you know, your censorship is effective, or it has the complete opposite
right.
reaction. In which case, I mean, this, I feel like this had the second reaction where people were just saying, like, okay, cool, yeah, no, fuck that. We're not going to do that. We're going to go ahead and, you know, and especially like Sony talked about, we're not going to release the interview now because whatever reason, I don't even know what the reason was, but then they later,
it was because of theater prices. It was like, we don't believe that the theaters are going to show it. And therefore we don't think that we can actually make money for it. So it's actually not in our, we're actually might lose money by like attempting. Right.
So then they just gave it away on YouTube.
Yeah,
I think. And
that's right.
I think that's right. And, yeah, that whole thing is just like very strange to me. It's like, which side are you actually on? Are you like, you don't want to make money. You think you want to make money, but then you're afraid of making not enough money, but then you give it away. So you can't, you guarantee that you can't make any money.
Yeah. I think they just sort of resolved like, look, we're not making any money off this thing. It's like, it's out in some cases. We might as well make it available for everyone, which I think is a smart, nice move. And it also shows that they're not afraid. Right. You know, by sort of releasing it like that. But, Isn't it amazing that we can just do that now? Like, you know, it's funny that you know, just at the drop of a dime, a movie studio can be like, all right, I want to just flip the switch, and now everyone has access to this movie instantly.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's
just like that U2 album that everyone got because they didn't want it.
Oh, speaking of Walkman, what's amazing is I found an ad. There's an ad from the 80s. For a Sony Walkman, I swear to God.
Preloaded.
That says, comes with a cassette tape for you too. They've been doing this shit for years.
Yeah.
This is nothing new with the whole iPhone album thing. Like, this is, they've been playing this whole game for a long time.
Yeah.
But who thinks that U2 is like a modern relevant album?
I don't know.
I have respect for U2, but like, God, who's... people's music collection is sacred. That's like their altar, right? That's like their home living room. You're cramming Bono into it. Like, that's not okay. Like, you can't expect people not to freak out over that.
I did love the social media backlash. They're like, who is this U2? I've never heard of them. They suck. Like, they must... Oh, like, what was it? The people were saying stuff. Like, and there was a similar thing with Paul McCartney. And Kanye West.
Yeah,
like last week I think, and the young folks, like the hipsters, are saying like, "Oh, it's really great to see Kanye helping out these unknown artists."
Right. Well, and there was
same thing with you too.
That's right. And there was also very angry tweets from people saying like, "Who the f is this Paul McCartney guy?"
Mostly Paul McCartney, like, being like, "Guys, seriously, I'm a fucking Beatle." Like, what
my my favorite one is just like, I listen to real artists, like, you know, burn. Iggy, and like, you know, like. All this stuff, and you know, it's funny how offensive that is to people in my generation who are just like, you know, it's a Beatle, for God's sakes, you know, like, don't, you can't write him off. He's knighted. He's
8-time Grammy winner or some
Sir
shit.
Sir Paul McCartney. Yeah, like,
not just Paul McCartney, Sir motherfucking Paul McCartney.
Yeah, he's dude's legit. And unquestionably, and it's just, I don't know. I very quickly feel like an old man by just like being like, you kids have no idea who, because there's, you know, I'm sure every generation goes through this where it's like, oh, you don't know who, like, old Willie Jensen is.
Right.
He's the best harmonica player in the East. Something like, lives on top of old Boot Hill.
Yeah, you're like, wait, is Boot Hill like just like a pile of boots?
No, Boot Hill is just where it existed a long time ago. Now it's a shopping mall.
Right. They've paved that over.
Yep.
Pave paradise.
Oh, my God.
Put up a parking lot. Yeah.
Oh, man. Was that Joni Mitchell?
Joni Mitchell. Nice,
wow.
Nicely
We're
done.
Going
sir.
There.
Yeah,
going there.
For sure.
Yeah.
frequent listeners will be very surprised that I haven't sung Baby, I'm Amazed.
Welcome to our tech show, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Eventually we'll get to technology product. Which actually is a very awkward but a poignant segue into our actual conversation about that. Well done, sir. Which is to say, my favorite thing from CES this year was the two medium, like multimedia, and I know multimedia is like a very old and almost like comically archaic term for us 21st century folk. But those of us who survived through the 20th century to get here will have remembered that multimedia used to mean multiple media for representing some kind of visual thing.
Right, like Play-Doh and crayons together.
Yeah, magical.
In the same place.
And now we have a 3D printer that will do that. So Play-Doh and crayon printer.
Okay.
I'm kidding. It's actually less cool than that. It's a plastic printer, like the regular old 3D printers that you've heard of all over the news over the last year. Something we've talked about at great length on this show. And so it melds the plastic printer for making parts
with Cocker Spaniels.
Is it Cocker Spaniels? I thought it was French Bulldogs.
No.
You leave Zelda out of this.
What is it? What is the product? What is the product?
It does plastic and electronics.
Oh, okay.
So you can print a soldering trace, basically a circuit, onto a substrate that you have also printed in the same machine. So it has two print heads. One is for plastic, one is for soldering.
That's amazing.
Conductive thing. And it is amazing. I mean, you can design and print a circuit board. Like
it's from nothing. Like and an enclosure for it.
Right? Yes. Like all is one.
And the thing to strap it onto your shoes.
Yes. Or
whatever you want to strap it onto.
Let's hope it's
built
your shoes.
It in. Yeah, no, I think that's really big, you know, because, you know, here's the thing, you know, like, I think printing circuit boards has recently gone through a really similar renaissance that, like, 3D printing has recently, right? Because now there's all these sort of at-home ways. Like, I remember, like, there was a company that let you actually print out something, send it off, and they just mail you back an amazing board. But the thing is, it's not...
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't really interesting to anybody outside of the, you know, like, electrical engineering community. But, you know, now when you combine that stuff with 3D printing and you start to get into, you know, interfacing with things like the Arduino and you're combining all these things together, you start to get this world where, you know, the quote-unquote Internet of Things that everybody keeps talking about is just like one tiny, tiny step closer to fruition, right? To being real.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, so, I don't know. It's exciting.
It is exciting. As an engineer and somebody who's worked a long time with manufacturing and you know, 3D printers and stuff like that. It's really great. I love it. I think it's amazing. You know, when I talk about 3D printers in just out in the world and in the bar or wherever, people say, oh, you know, I heard that you can make like a cake or like a sugar thing. I saw this 3D printing sugar thing, which I tweeted two weeks ago or so, which is totally, totally awesome. And I'm like, yeah, boring, yawn. Like, because for me, it's like, yeah, cool. It's interesting, but it's like, yeah. It's been there for a while.
That's all relative, yeah. I mean, for cake enthusiasts.
It's all relative. It's like what you posted earlier today with, what is it, Schwarzenegger next to Yao Ming. Schwarzenegger's like two heads shorter than Yao Ming.
Dude, Schwarzenegger's a child next to Yao Ming. I'm not sure how we moved from cake printing to
We'll get back.
But the point is, you know, if I'm a mathematician and I make cakes on the side, I'm really into fractals.
Yeah.
That's the biggest and most important thing in the world to me.
So now you can make the most amazing, beautiful fractal cake
out of
sugar and chocolate.
Exactly.
And I will want to eat that and pay you, like, shut up and take my money.
Yeah.
Like, that's
yeah. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. You know, when I think about all this stuff, when I think about 3D printing circuit boards and 3D printing in general, all of the tools that are available for software engineers and designers, as a engineer myself, I'm struck with this overwhelming sense of, like, all right, there's really no excuse for not doing stuff. I mean, it's amazing. I'm filled with like possibility and potential for like, God, I have the most amazing tools at my disposal, but I also am overwhelmed with guilt for not using them. I'm like, oh man, I'm such a jerk.
What the fuck am I doing with my life?
Right?
Like, I could be doing amazing things with these 3D printers and all I'm doing is talking about them.
Exactly. Like, have you seen the TED Talk with that that kid from Africa who was 14 years old who built a windmill? Have you seen this talk? Yeah, I forget his name, but
I've seen pretty much every TED Talk.
There you go. But here's the thing. There's an experience that he describes in his TED Talk, maybe his second TED Talk, of being taken away from his home village and brought to, you know, I think London, where he was, you know, speaking about the fact that he made this windmill,
right?
And you know, he basically saw Google for the first time.
Oh yeah.
And his experience with Google, he's where has this Google been this whole time? Like, what the hell? You guys have access to a thing that gives you just everything you would ever want and ask for. Like,
why has no one told me about
this? Oh my God. Like, and he was just blown away by it. And it's just, you know, I mean, we grew up in a generation where we didn't have Google, and it's just, I don't know. To me, it's
I don't know. We didn't have shoes.
We also, yeah, they were all in Boot Hills where they were.
Yeah.
But basically, you know, it's just I'm excited by all these tools, but I'm also reminded of how I'm not doing anything. Maybe that says something about me, but
I don't know.
But it's kind of funny, right? It's like, in a world where you could potentially learn about anything and build anything, you know, like, God, like it's exciting and awesome, but I don't know. I'm also not building stuff as much as I should be, right?
I mean,
I'm
you
just
are.
Overwhelmed by just this feeling that, like, I could be doing more, right?
But that's the Kurzweil singularity thing, though, right? I mean, yeah. We're talking about, well, how, you know, 20 years ago, it took 10 years to do anything awesome.
Yeah.
But now it takes 10 minutes. Yeah. Unless it's a 3D printer and then it's 10 hours.
Yeah.
To make, like, a sugar cube that's amazing and someone eats it and it's done. Like, wow, that was awesome. It took 10 hours to make that.
Yeah.
And as someone who's currently, I'm doing this project now, which is 1,000 cranes, origami cranes.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it gives me some perspective into that because, you know, it's like, I was posting yesterday, I think, about, or maybe the day before, about how now I feel so much more respect for blacksmiths who make chainmail.
Oh, yeah.
Because every fucking link in that chainmail, someone had to take a piece of wire.
Oh God.
A straight thing and make it into a round thing. And then they did that like 100,000 times.
First they had to make the straight thing.
Right. Well, exactly. They had to extrude some molten shit into that first. And then, cause they, I mean, like, you don't buy, just like go to the fucking Home Depot in 1685 and buy a spool of chainmail wire. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't
exactly
work that way. You have to make that shit first. Then you make the rings out of that, and then you make the mail out of the rings that you made. So it's like 100,000 hours to make like one suit of armor for a prince. And then you get stabbed in the head and you're like, well, that was fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's over. But
exactly. And no one else ever wears it because now it's tainted or cursed or whatever because that guy died in that armor. And you're like, well, okay.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's just, it brings me like this really, it's a sort of a surreal feeling to spend all this time, and in the end I'm going to spend 100 hours on one piece of art, and that one piece of art is going to hang on my wall. And as I was sitting folding last night, I try to fold like 20 cranes a night, and that way it's like 50 total days to finish the project. And you know, I was sitting there and I started thinking, I was like, I had just seen the news about Justin's car accident, and so my mind went into this sort of morbid state, which tends to happen. And I started thinking, like, damn, so if I have, like, a really, really awful friend comes over and just, like let's say I don't have any of these friends, thankfully, currently, but I have had in the past. Friends who are just, like, raging pyromaniacs.
Okay.
Somebody who just, like, likes to play with a lighter. I can see somebody just, like, sitting on my couch and be like, look over their shoulder, be like, oh, shit, that whole shit looks like it's made out of paper. Let's find out. And just, like, light the bottom of it and walk away. And I'd be like, dude, you just fucking lit fire to something that took me 100 hours to make.
Yeah.
And you just burned it to the ground with no thought whatsoever. And I felt like this immediate sense of sort of panic, I guess. And just like, damn, that just sucks. Like, I spent so much time on that. And to think, like, such a fragile thing. And it's so, it's going to be beautiful right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already beautiful. I have only about 10% done. And some of the photos that I've posted are just like breathtakingly beautiful. But it's just like, damn, it's such a fleeting thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's temporary. And, you know, it brings up the question, like, there's a question that, you know, art kind of, I don't know, theorists talk about, you know, with, or, you know, any creative professional sort of faced with, is it about, you know, the journey or the destination? Is it about the process of making it, or is it about the thing, or the, like, the final product, right? You know, there's the, have you heard of mandalas? You know, like a sand mandala is?
Yeah, and then you blow it away as soon as,
and
you
then it all goes into the
so
river.
It's like the idea is impermanence.
Exactly.
I'm glad you went there, because I was totally thinking of that. And just like, damn, you know, you spend hours and hours and hours of your life spending, like, tweaking all these beautiful, you know, little, I'm like pinching my fingers, like anyone out there in Radio Land can see that.
Knowing that you're going to destroy it.
Knowing full well that you're spending all this time on absolutely nothing. And it's really interesting you should bring that up, because somebody, somebody came to me and said, so you're spending all this time on some fucking origami? Like, what, wouldn't you have rather spent that time making like learning a violin or like something that's more tangible, something you can retain? Something more substantial. And I sat there for like, I don't know, a few minutes, and I just thought, like, damn.
Is the answer yes? You would have?
I mean, no, it isn't. That's what I'm saying. Like, damn, like, it isn't. I would rather do what I am doing. I'm doing it for purpose.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it as a sort of meditative practice and you know, a creative sculpture kind of endeavor. And so, like, I think, like, damn. So if my job was to make cranes, like, all day long, I might spend a lot more energy making a machine that makes cranes.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
since it's not my job, it's absolutely, I feel almost wrong even talking about a machine that would make cranes.
Right. Well,
because
it
cheapens the experience. The fact that I have spent all this time and devoted all of my focus to this thing for 100 hours.
That's right. Yeah. And you have appreciation for, you know, understanding and knowing a craft. You know, I think like a lot of developers have this, you know, regardless of, you know, sort of what field you're in, you're excited about, you know, you're excited about the process, excited about learning. I mean, the sad truth is that there's very little chance that like a lot of the code that we write and a lot of the things that we build is going to live on for forever. And, you know, certainly, you know, when I was back in the day when I was making like websites, and you know, for a while I was a Flash programmer, right? You know, like when was the last time you saw a Flash website that lived more than like a year, you know, before it got rebuilt into something more Googleable, right? Or something like that. And so, you know, I've got an entire, you know, 5 years of work after I, you know, left school that's just like, it's just gone, you know? It's just not on the internet. You can find it on archive.org, but like,
maybe.
Hopefully. There's very little incentive for you to do so. So it's like, it's kind of funny. You have to appreciate the craft and have to understand, you know, what's going on. And just connecting it back to the point before, you know, it's even more interesting when you think about like just the number of tools that we have to work with all that and the amount of stuff that we can create, you know? I don't know, but
well, I think this is a very, I'm really trying to stretch on this one because it was something I wanted to talk about from the beginning earlier today. Some of you have played Skyrim. And, you know, Charles brought me this beautiful piece of wonderment, which was that somebody took Macho Man, or was it?
So, all right.
Yeah,
so,
you tell it.
So speaking of content that it's created, This piece of content did not get destroyed. This piece of content thrived and became famous, succeeded in the world.
Millions of YouTube
and
views.
Yeah, I don't know if this was about the process of making it. Maybe it was, but some wonderful person used all the available tools that they had, right? Which included the game Skyrim and knowledge of Randy Macho Man Savage. Sound clips from Randy Macho Man Savage and presumably some images, some photographs of him to use as textures on 3D models, and replaced the dragon in Skyrim with Randy Macho Man Savage himself
not just the audio,
like a strange extruded 3D model of a weird dude
flying
around
shooting something.
Saying like, oh yeah, and just murdering lots of villagers. and it's
unsuspecting villagers.
It's just perfect. Everything about it is amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But see, that's that beautiful thing about crowdsourced brilliance, right? I mean,
like, yeah,
we have now, and this ties back into the 3D printer thing with the 30 seconds we have left in the show, where people can take the technology that becomes commonplace after it was like this $100,000 investment before. Now it's $50 fucking, or not even, it's free in the case of digital art assets. And they can make something amazing that brings brings together different worlds in a way that no one has ever seen before.
That's right. Yeah, and it sort of paints this weird picture. It's like, look, am I making something on top of somebody else's, you know, framework that is going to live a finite life and maybe become famous, or am I making something that can make other things and that other people can make? You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to end on that. So, Charles, this 30 minutes has flown by as usual, and I'm really very thankful to have you. And folks out there, stay tuned for more.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's been fun. Cheers.
This has been Distilled. Thanks for listening, folks.